Welcome to Bible and Bourbon with Pastor Ben. Today we are going to be studying the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2, verse 1 through 12, the story of the Magi visiting Jesus. Our joy for the week is from one of our listeners, Catherine. She got married to her high school sweetheart. Congratulations, Catherine. Today, I'm drinking Angel's Envy Bourbon. Fun fact, my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law used to work at Angel's Envy. In fact, the bottle I am drinking was part of their yearly stipend of whiskey. I was just lucky enough to have family that likes to share. Now, let's start our study with a prayer. Creator of peace, give us rest this week and this moment. Allow us to find our peace in you and our comfort in your being. Let this passage about travelers from distant lands speak to our own traveling hearts. Let this not be the best part of our day, but only a building block to something better to come. Amen. Our reading today comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied. "For this is what the prophet has written, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel.' Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time that the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I, too, may go and worship him.' After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route." Matthew, chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. The very first verse in our scripture reading for today is packed with information. Matthew tells us that Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in Judea, which you probably already knew. Bethlehem was a small village outside of Jerusalem, and it was the birthplace to King David and the Davidic line. But why would Matthew say, "in Judea"? Why wouldn't he just say Bethlehem? Well, as it turns out, there's another Bethlehem. In fact, there's a Bethlehem about 7 miles northeast of the town of Nazareth. You probably also know that Jesus was known as Jesus of Nazareth. It is where Jesus grew up after he flees from Bethlehem, which we'll talk about next week. He went to make sure that these first century Christians knew that Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, the one associated with King David, the one from the stump of Jesse, and not the town that was close to Nazareth. There was probably a fair amount of confusion back then about which Bethlehem he was actually born in. Even today, there are some historians which debate which Bethlehem Jesus actually came from, even though Matthew is quite clear that it is the one close to Jerusalem. But by clarifying the province, Matthew did his best to overcome any doubt that someone might have. Additionally, in this first verse, we get some dating for Jesus' birth, with the line that it was during the time of King Herod. King Herod ruled the province of Judea from 37 to 4 BC, which means that Jesus had to be born sometime before the year 4 BC. Now you might be asking, how could it be that Jesus was born in the year 4 BC? Isn't that 4 years before Christ? And that's a good question, but the answer is quite simple. The monk that decided when AD started and when BC ended got it wrong. He had the date of Jesus' birth off by roughly 4 years or so. But that really has nothing to do with the Bible. Next, in this first verse, we are introduced to an interesting group of people, the Magi. You probably know them as the three kings or the three wise men. However, we have no idea how many there were. The idea that there were three of them most likely comes from the fact that they brought three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But there could have been any number of magi as long as there was more than one. It could be 2, it could be 20, it could be 200. It doesn't take 3 people to carry 3 gifts. It could be more or it could be less. The Gospel of Matthew uses the word magi, which is not a word we use often in English. If it is used, it's something akin to a wizard. Magi is the root for our English word for magic or magicians. So often, magi are associated with magic or magicians in some way. But this connection between magi and magical acts comes not from the Hebrew sources or from the Persian sources where the magi came from, but instead from our Roman sources. And many of the historians who wrote about this association between the magi and magic had never met one. So we have to take their view of the magi as magicians with a heavy grain of salt. Often in the New Testament, this word is translated. So we don't see magi, but instead we see the word kings or wise men. The translation of magi as kings has really fallen out of favor recently, because in general, it's a very poor translation. They almost certainly were not anything close to what we would describe as a king. Wise men might be a little more accurate, but even it isn't quite true. Wise men on its own isn't a very descriptive term. It doesn't say anything about social standing, occupation, or any other fact about the men other than they have wisdom. Frankly, the best way we could possibly translate the word magi is probably priest, because that's what they were. They were priests in the Zoroastrian religion. They came from a priestly class and priestly families. They conducted religious rituals and served in their temples. In fact, there are still Zoroastrian priests, or magi, in India today that claim to have had their roles passed down from father to son since before the time of the Gospel of Matthew. So these magi were priests from a foreign country and from a foreign religion. They were not Jewish, either ethnically or religiously. In fact, these priests were from the East, which is of particular importance. By this time in history, the Parthian Empire, an Iranian empire, had come to dominate the area east of Jerusalem. In fact, they controlled the province of Judea and the city of Jerusalem until just a few decades before the birth of Jesus. So, the Parthian Empire, while it did not control the province of Judea currently, still had a cultural impact on the area. Additionally, the area to the east was associated with the historical Babylonian Empire. Even though the Persians were the ones that conquered Babylon, the area to the east had always been seen by the Jewish people as Babylon. And for Jewish people in the first century, the greatest stain on their historical pride was their captivity in Babylon. In the Old Testament, the Jewish people were removed from their homeland of Judea and Jerusalem and sent to Babylon for a period of a generation. The fact that these priests from Babylon came to pay homage to the king of the Jews shows that Jesus was overcoming this historical stain. Jesus was not just the king over the Jewish people, but in fact, he was the king that could conquer Babylon. Even these foreign priests from an exotic religion came to worship and pay homage to this Jewish king from a small village outside of Jerusalem. As we discussed 2 weeks ago, the Gospel of Matthew seems to have been particularly written for Jewish Christians. And those newly converted Christians with Jewish heritage and knowledge would have understood the significance of having these foreign priests come and offer gifts to a Jewish king. It would place them back on top as the center to which all other nations looked. And that's the significance of having the Magi come to Jesus. And all of that information just comes from this first verse. In the next verse, we see them explain to King Herod why they're there. But they don't know that King Herod doesn't know what they're talking about. So they ask him this question. Where's the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. Now, I think it's a bit odd that they were asking who was born king of the Jews to King Herod, because King Herod was king of the Jews. And what's important about this question is King Herod wasn't born king of the Jews. Before King Herod took the throne, Judah had been ruled by the Hasmonean kings since the year 140 BC. Herod had been granted the title of King of Judea by the Roman Senate when he agreed to overthrow the Hasmonean dynasty. And in fact, Herod ruled only as a client to the Roman Empire. Herod had not been born a king, but in fact he had been born a commoner, which is not something that happens very often. Most kings inherit their title from their father after being born to rule, but Herod was an upstart. And throughout his reign, he had to deal with constant threats by the old kingly line. His mother-in-law, Alexandria, was in fact part of the Hasmonean dynasty, and during his reign, she tried to get Aristobulus III, the Hasmonean pretender to the throne, elected high priest by Mark Antony, a Roman general. This would have been a direct threat to King Herod, as the Hasmonean kings had held the title of king and high priest whenever they ruled. So, King Herod responded to this threat by assassinating Aristobulus. In fact, during Herod's rule, he would later go on to kill his mother-in-law, as well as several uncles and many more family members, all in an effort to secure power for himself. Being an upstart king, Herod had to be ruthless in dealing with pretenders, who often had a more legitimate claim to the throne than himself. Additionally, Herod was king of the Jews, but he wasn't really a Jew. Herod's family did not come from the province of Judea, or Judah, but instead they came from the area south of Judah, which at various times has been called various names, but it's often known as Edom. In the Old Testament, we see them referred to often as Edomites. Israel was founded by Israel and his sons. But before Israel changed his name to Israel, he was known as Jacob. And Jacob got the land that would become Israel by stealing it away from his older brother, Esau. Esau and his descendants had to move to a mountainous territory south of Israel, which became known as Edom. The people who lived there shared a similar culture to the Jewish people, but in many ways, they were less refined. They were mountain folk. You can think of them in the same way as you might think of hillbillies from Kentucky. Edomites were seen as like Israelites, but they weren't Israelites. They were also seen as betrayers of Israel, because they allied with Babylon when they forced the Jewish people into exile. In general, the Edomites weren't well liked by Israelites. The Hasmonean dynasty had cemented their control over Israel in part because they invaded and controlled Edom. They led a group of Jewish soldiers into the heart of Edom and forcibly converted the people living there. And this all took place less than 100 years before Herod was made king in Judah. So, while Herod may have been Jewish, he wasn't seen as fully Jew. His family had converted to Judaism, but they were still Edomites. You can think of the Beverly Hillbillies. They might have lived in Beverly Hills, but they were still hillbillies. So, while Herod sat on the throne in Jerusalem as king of the Jews, he sat on a very shaky throne. He was barely a king. He only wore a crown because a foreign empire had placed it upon his head. And he was barely a Jew coming from a foreign land. Every day, he had to justify his position, and he used force to maintain his status. So, when these foreign priests asked him where the one who had been born king of the Jews was, it set off every red flag in his head, because he knew that there were many people out there who had more of a claim to the kingship and more of a claim to Judaism than him. So, Herod in that moment decided to do exactly what he had done in situations like this in the past. He was going to kill this king wherever he was. So, he called together the chief priest and the teachers of the law and asked them where the Messiah, the king of the Jews, was to be born. It didn't take them long to tell him that the king of the Jews was to be born in Bethlehem. The quote that Matthew gives us comes from Micah chapter 5, verse 2, and it's interpreted by us today, as well as Jews in the first century, as meaning that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, like King David, showing a connection with the future king to the past king. Once Herod learns this, he asks the Magi where the star had risen. Now, if you have a little nativity scene at home, you probably see the Magi with baby Jesus in the manger. In reality, the Magi came to Jesus and Mary somewhere between several months, if not more than a year, after Jesus' birth. If they saw the star in the east and started on their journey, it would take them quite a while to travel west. You can see Herod's cunning in the next verse. To be a man like Herod, who had spent so much time at the top of a political hierarchy in turmoil, you would have to be a cunning and sly man. King Herod had no problem stepping over people to get to his position. He had no problem lying or living in the cutthroat world of politics. In fact, it seems as if he enjoyed living in a house of cards. And you can see that with what he did next. For he asked the Magi to report back to him on their way home. He's doing this to find exactly where this king, who was born in Bethlehem, was staying, so he could send his assassins to kill him. Herod may have been evil, but he definitely knew his devious craft. After this, the Magi continued on their journey until they found the house where Jesus and Mary were staying. Particularly, it is a house. Jesus was no longer in the manger, and I'm glad to see that he was finally able to move up in the world somewhat. They came and they presented him with those famous gifts, as they bowed down, submitting themselves, their religion, and their people to Jesus. Now, there's a lot of theories about why these three gifts were brought to Jesus, why gold, frankincense, and myrrh were particularly brought by the Magi. Gold seems fairly understandable. It's valuable. But frankincense and myrrh are a bit more unique. They could have simply been brought as gifts, because they may have been common to a king. Myrrh may have been used as anointing oil and frankincense as perfume. But they could also have had symbolic value as well. There are many different writings from pastors or scholars about the possible symbolism behind these gifts. But there's no real consensus of the understanding of the symbolism behind these gifts. Meaning, one person might think one thing, and another might think something else. Additionally, there isn't much of an understanding of what happened to these gifts after they were brought to Jesus. I mean, Jesus as a baby wouldn't have much use for gold, frankincense, or myrrh. There are some traditions that have been passed down that say that these gifts were stolen by the thief that was crucified beside Jesus. But the truth is, we don't know. Matthew doesn't tell us why these gifts were brought, or if there was any symbolism behind them. And likewise, he doesn't tell us what happened to them later on. All we know is that these gifts were valuable and showed once again that these foreign magi were submitting to this humble child born king of the Jews. Then, in a dream, the magi were warned not to go back to King Herod, foiling his clever scheme. In general, if you were a first century Jewish convert to Christianity, and you read this section of the Gospel of Matthew, you would have a few big takeaways. First, you would see Jesus as a true king and a true Jew. Herod's sons and grandsons continued to rule sections of Judea as Roman clients all the way until 92 AD, when Herod Agrippa II passed away childless. The Jewish converts to Christianity that read the Gospel of Matthew would have been familiar with life under the Herodian kings. And Herod's sons and grandsons were no less brutal than that first Herod himself. These first century Jewish Christian converts would have seen the Herodian kings both as illegitimate kings and illegitimate Jews. Matthew was putting forth Jesus as a better option. Jesus was born in Bethlehem, the same place as King David. And unlike the Herodian kings, Jesus did not pay homage to foreign nations. Herod was at the beck and call of the Roman Empire, while Jesus was accepting homage from foreign dignitaries. This story of the Magi coming from a foreign land of Babylon to worship at the feet of this child places Judah and Bethlehem at the center of the world, with Jesus as the true king of the Jews and the center of it all. But Herod won't go down that easy. He spent a lifetime scheming to get to the position he was in, and he wasn't going to go down without a fight. And next week, we're going to hear a little bit more about that fight. As always, thank you for joining me. And if you have any questions over the material, please reach out to me at bible.bourbon@gmail.com. Additionally, next week we will not have a new episode. It is Holy Week, and I will be a bit busy in my church, but we will have a new episode the following week. If you do drink, please do so responsibly. While it is true that Jesus drank wine, an occasional glass is different than an addiction. If you need help, please seek it. If you need help but don't know where to look, please reach out to me and I'll be happy to guide you. Blessings, everyone.